So, Simon, tell us a little bit more about this. Food inflation at its lowest level and the supermarkets that seem to be struggling. What's going on here?
These two things are directly linked. The supermarkets are having a really, really tough time of it at the moment. Now, some of this is down to us changing the way that we're shopping. So rather than heading to those big out-of-town stores, we're shopping more at small convenience stores, and that means that we're picking up stuff when we need it, and so we're picking up less. There's also a move to online, which removes the opportunity for us to be wandering around a hypermarket just randomly picking up stuff that we don't need. And there's also the rise of the discounters, Aldi and Lidl. Their market share is still relatively small when you compare it to the supermarket giants, but their market share is growing, whereas the supermarket giants' market share is falling. And all of this has driven an awful lot of competition in the supermarket sector, as those supermarkets seek to compete with each other and they seek to compete with the discounters. And that's pushing down food prices.
What do your readers tell you about their changing shopping habits?
Well, what's interesting about this is I think that what our readers tend to tell us is that they think the supermarkets have been taking them for granted. A lot of people are saying that they are more than happy to shop elsewhere, or they're more than happy to shop at the discounters. They're happy to head to the market, to the butchers, to the greengrocers, because they don't think that the supermarkets have been paying too much attention to what they want. The supermarkets have been doing a lot of competition on price, and not a lot of competition on quality. And when they have been competing on price, you've got all of those baffling offers. The buy one, get one free. The buy two, get three. And it's very difficult to actually compare those prices. And you end up, in order to get the good offer, having to buy more of something that you want. And then you chuck it in your fridge and you throw it away because it's gone off.
You spoke about the discounters and, of course, Netto entering back into the market as well. Tell us about that.
Well, this is Sainsbury's making an attempt to try and take on Lidl and Aldi, and it's teamed up with Netto, which is a discount name from the past, and they've relaunched some stores. Whether that's really...
Good move for Sainsbury's, do you think?
It's difficult to know whether it's going to work. I think what's really crucial here to remember is that the supermarket's missed a trick, and it's not just about price. Because if you look at Aldi and Lidl's adverts and the way that they've promoted themselves since they arrived over here and really started making a big play for the British shopper, is they've promoted themselves on quality and price.
Yeah.
The thing that they will promote themselves on first is, look at all the good stuff we've got, and then they'll say, oh, and it's really cheap.
Because there's not so much stigma, is there? Going around with a Lidl bag. You see people with Lidl and a Waitrose bag. It's not so much of a problem anymore.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at... I tell you what, some of the wealthiest people out there are some of the tightest with their money, aren't they? You know?
Money saving tip.
You should expect the Lidl car park to be full of Range Rovers.
Well, let's talk now. So we've talked about supermarkets. Now let's talk about something probably quite a substantially lot more serious, I think, for a lot of people, particularly here in London. And this is this issue of a lost decade for house prices and wages, what you've been talking about here. This must be something that you have a lot of your readers getting in contact with you on the This Is Money website.
Well, house prices are obviously a huge issue for people. It affects how wealthy people feel, and also it affects their lives in the sense that basically if you've bought a property and it's gone down in value and you've fallen into negative equity, or you've even seen the equity eaten away, then that's going to stop you moving. A lot of people have put their lives on hold since the financial crisis, and they've not been able to move home because of this situation where their houses have lost value. But at the same time, they're reading reports telling them about how the property market is booming. And the reason for this is the fact that the London property market has been soaring away. House price inflation in London has been well into double digits for some time now. And that's been skewing those national figures. So what this story is about is some research that looked into the house price figures, removed London from the equation, and said that actually, if you take London out of it, then house prices are still at the same level as they were in 2004. So if you look at the graph, what you'll see is there's a point in 2004, house prices kept going up until 2007 when they hit a peak, and then they fell. Now, if you look at the graph that has London in it, it shows them falling and then going back up and back above that 2007 peak. If you look at the graph that doesn't have London in it, then they're still stuck at that 2004 level.
That paper you can hear is me rustling, looking at these graphs. Do go onto the This Is Money website and take a look at what you're talking about, which, you know, you're talking about they're staying the same price, but sadly for everyone living in London, we can't take London out of the equation.
No, and it's a little bit disingenuous because the situation also is that if you drill into the ONS figures on wages, then people's wages haven't gone anywhere since 2004 once you adjust them for inflation. And it's actually the relationship between wages and house prices that is really, really important, because interest rates might be very, very low at the moment, which is helping keep the whole property market afloat and helping people pay those high prices. But it's your wages that you need to pay that mortgage, to pay for that house for. And when interest rates rise, those ultra-cheap mortgage payments are going to get more expensive. And if you look at the relationship between wages and house prices, it's very, very high. So house prices have only been more expensive compared to wages than they are now during the peak of that 2007 boom.
You spoke about interest rate rises, very topical at the moment. They are going to stay at record lows of 0.5%, which they brought in March 2009. So, of course, there's going to be a whole generation of first-time homebuyers that will know nothing other than these ultra, ultra low rates. It will cause people a few issues when rates start to rise, which they, I'm sure they will, though not in the foreseeable future.
Well, ultimately, interest rates are going to have to go up. I mean, the Bank of England has made it perfectly clear that it has no intention of putting them up at any time soon. It wants rates to stay lower for longer because it's concerned about the recovery and it's concerned about the effect of rising interest rates. And actually, what's happened recently is there's been a little bit more crisis in the Eurozone. Mm-hmm. There's been a slight concern that growth in the UK is starting to slow. And also, the rapid rise in house prices that we'd seen on those headline figures is starting to tail off, that some of the momentum's being lost, especially in the London market. And this has pushed the outlook for interest rates when the interest rate rise will first come back. So there had been talk that interest rates may even rise this year, earlier in the year.
Of course, about 6 months ago. We were expecting it to be around now, weren't we?
Right about now. So they were talking about November. Well, we've just seen that November meeting. And guess what? They're still on hold.
Absolutely.
So then it had shifted to spring 2015. Now the markets are suggesting, well, it could be even later than that. Now, the problem with assessing this is that the market's opinion of when interest rates will rise shifts around an awful lot. For example, at various points in the last 6 years, the market has said interest rates would have already gone up by now. So I wouldn't base too much of your life on that. But what there is an opportunity to do now is to take advantage of those low interest rates and the fact that that horizon has been pushed back and take out some very, very cheap mortgages. So there's people out there on standard variable rates with their lender, which will rise when the base rate goes up, and they might be paying perhaps 4 or 5%. Now, if they were to go out and find themselves a new mortgage and remortgage, they could fix for 5 years at perhaps 3%. They could fix for 2 years at perhaps 2%. So they've got an opportunity to not just save themselves some money, but also give themselves some peace of mind.
What are the real blockbuster rates that we're seeing out there at the moment?
Well, some of these rates are astonishingly cheap. For example, you can, if you've got a big deposit or a large amount of equity in your home, so say 40%.
Yeah.
Now, that is an awful lot of money. Mm-hmm. But there are actually quite a lot of people out there who do have very large amounts of equity in their home. You could fix your mortgage for 5 years at less than 3%. So you'd be looking at about 2.8%. Now, that is exceptionally cheap money by historical standards. And the knowledge of knowing that your mortgage payments won't go up at any time in the next 5 years is a really good basis for doing some financial planning on. The other sort of rates that are very eye-catching are two-year fixed rates. Those are below 2%. The problem with one of those, though, is if you take out a two-year fixed rate, you're probably going to be looking at needing to remortgage again when that two-year fixed rate runs out at a point when the interest rates are moving up. Another eye-catcher is a 10-year fixed-rate mortgage. So I'm not sure whether you know what you're going to be doing in 2024. But Nationwide would like you to still be paying an interest rate of just 3.49% on your mortgage.
Wow, how popular are these?
They're a very niche product.
Yeah.
The problem is people don't really like committing to that far into the future, and they're not convinced that they won't move in the meantime. And whilst many of these long-term fixed-rate mortgages you can take with you, you will have to have it reassessed. And if you need to borrow more money, you'll need to borrow more money at a different rate. So those really long-term mortgages have never really taken off in the UK.
Well, that voice you've been hearing is Simon Lambert, editor of This Is Money, the award-winning financial website and money section of The Mail Online. I'm Georgie Frost. This is Consuming Issues. Coming up, we'll have your money-saving tips. We've been asking you all day, what are your money-saving tips? Because I'm delighted to say that as part of Simon's This Is Money team, something of a bit of a money-saving expert, because Richard Browning, one of his intrepid reporters, has written How to Survive the Credit Crunch, 101 Top Tips on How to Beat the Credit Crisis. It needs a bit of an update, doesn't it? Doesn't it, Richard? So we've been trying to help you out here by asking people, what is their top money-saving tip? We went out and asked people.
I think I know the right thing to do, I just don't do them.
I do shop around for my fruit and veg, so I will maybe look at some prices and then go to other places.
They always have these labels on, you know, if you go in at the end of the day, you can see this orange strip where it says it's reduced to 95p or something like that, you know.
Yes, I create different plans, just putting part of my money to savings account, but yeah, it's not always working.
Don't buy alcohol.
So, Richard, hello. Lovely to have you here.
Hello there.
Hello. Annie, if you could just tell us, what have people been suggesting that Richard could put in his new book?
All sorts of things, but I won't suggest reusing cling film or turning your socks inside out again. That's pretty disgusting. So basically, all sorts of things, really, from taking cash out instead of using your card so you know exactly what you're spending. Alex says, spend someone else's cash, which I particularly like. Ben at Smoking Tootin has said, turn down the thermostat to 1 degree, close your curtains when it's dark, but open them for daylight. Millie emailed us to say, wait until about 6 o'clock, then get the reductions of the day at the supermarket and then bung them in the freezer. Lots and lots of different things coming in. Oh, splitting your train tickets as well. That's another one.
And how can people get in contact if they've got some more ideas?
Yeah, we've got some more ideas. You can tweet us at Share Radio UK, email us at consumingissues@shareradio.co.uk or call us on 020-339-849.
Thank you very much, Annie. I have just at random picked a page in How to Survive the Credit Crunch. Before it was Get Paid More. How we wish that were the truth.
Can we turn the microphones off and I'll just have a word with my boss over there?
Well, yes, you can discuss that afterwards, boss. Are you listening? It's minor two. Trade down your car, it says. And 28, that was 27, is dump your car altogether.
I did try that once. I should point out that I have...
I'm hoping you've tried all of these, Richard.
I have tried them all. I wouldn't have written about them otherwise.
There we go.
Some of the ones in the book are a bit out of date now, but I have updated it on the website, 50 Ways to Save Money.
We're giving you a few more, which, so you can have 101.
But I did try and live without a car for a while after it was written off in an accident. And I was quite determined to... This was a few years ago, but at the time it was... before supermarkets delivered. And it got to a point where I live, it was actually quite difficult to live without a car. But I think now, and if you live in London, you can ask yourself, do you really need a car? I mean, the other thing you can do, if you can cut your supermarket bill by £20 a week, which is £1,000 over a year, within about 5 years, you've got enough to buy a car.
That is true, but can we cut our supermarket bills down that easily? Can we change our spending habits? Simon?
Well, I'm just going to step in there because me and Richard, on the car debate, have been having this car debate for about 6 or 7 years now. Basically, I live in London and Richard has been trying to convince me to get rid of the car. And over that period of time, I have become more wedded to the idea of the car rather than less because actually it is quite difficult to do a lot of stuff if you don't have a car, such as taking things to the tip, buying things from DIY stores. And also, I do actually now have two young children, a four-year-old and a two-year-old, and my wife works outside of London, so the car is pretty essential for her because she has to take the kids to nursery there. But one point is that actually, over that period of time, whilst we've been having this debate, there has emerged all of these car-sharing services. So
yes, tell us about those.
Things like Zipcar, where you can hire a car by the hour. Some other ones have emerged as well. And actually, those are a great way of avoiding that whole, I need to take some stuff to the tip, I need to go buy something from the DIY store and I can't carry it back on the bus scenario. So actually, it has got a lot easier to do that not having a car thing. And some of those, I think, have spread, you know, they've spread to different cities. So you probably do still need to be living in a city in the UK, but you can do them. And the other thing I see, if you do go down to your home base or your B&Q or mm-hmm. something, is people getting taxis back. So they will go down, they'll buy the big stuff, they'll phone up, they'll get a taxi to take them back. And, yeah, probably that taxi ride at, you know, £10, £15 feels quite expensive. But it's a lot cheaper than running a car.
Well, if you ask Amy, you can get it for £8, can't you, with Uber? So, you know, there's money-saving tips to be had everywhere. Richard, why did you write this book in the first place?
Well, it was... excuse me. It was a piece I wrote in 2005, originally, for the website.
Mm.
And then we reached the financial crisis, and suddenly things that I'd been writing about became part of the national consciousness, and everybody was looking at ways to save money because no one was going to get a pay rise for the next few years. So the only way to give yourself a pay rise is to spend less money.
Mm. Is that true, Simon? Have you seen that since the credit crunch? Have people become more savvy about money, wanting to save more money?
I think they have. I think people have become very much more engaged with their finances. I think this reflects also on what we were talking about with the supermarkets earlier and them suffering. I mean, some of those supermarkets built up businesses based on those big hypermarkets of basically just flogging you anything that they could possibly think of. And Britain was pretty happy to be wandering around buying anything it could possibly think of in those sort of 2005, 2006, 2007 years. People have cut back since then, and they've started to engage with money and finance a lot more, and they've realised that they need to take responsibility for their finances, and people aren't just going to look after them.
Simon, what's the... if you can say the one thing that people write you most about on the This Is Money website?
Well, the one thing that people flag the most with us is the thing that is still on the floor all those years later, interest rates and savings accounts. There are an awful lot of people out there benefiting from low mortgage rates, but there are an awful lot of people out there seeing terrible returns on their savings. And we really need to get away from this idea that just keeping interest rates at rock bottom for as long as possible is the best possible thing that can happen. Because actually, savers are losing money, and so they're spending less money. Businesses actually will tend to lose money when rates are low. And also, we've got to remember, it's an emergency measure. Having a base rate at 0.5% is not a desirable situation.
Then why is it being kept so low for so long? Like you said, it was introduced as an emergency measure, but that was 5 years ago. Have we not moved on?
We have moved on. We've moved on substantially. But I think it's the fear of what will happen when rates start to go up. And our consumer economy is still very fragile. And that's why it's really important that people are doing these money-saving things, because mm-hmm. it is putting a bit more money in their pocket. But of course, there is that conundrum where the more money that people save and the less they spend,
absolutely.
The less money there is going around the economy, and the more companies struggle.
So apologies for then having money-saving tips, because we're doing the economy down, aren't we? We should be getting people to spend. No, of course not. So Simon, what is it that you'll be investigating this week coming up?
Well, something that's been in the headlines this week has been interest-only mortgages. Now, this is a situation where an awful lot of people took out interest-only mortgages during the peak of the boom in order to basically just buy more expensive properties. And banks were very, very happy to encourage people to do that. I remember I took out a mortgage in 2006, and the bank's main concern was whether I wanted to borrow some more money, including the line, you do realise that if you took an interest-only mortgage, your repayments would be lower and you could borrow more money. I did politely decline the more money.
Good.
There's a lot of people with the mortgages that they're not paying off, interest-only mortgages, and quite a few of those are approaching retirement now. And the problem is their income's going to fall, and essentially they need to get these mortgages paid off. So we're going to be looking quite a lot more at what people can be doing to get those mortgages cleared, because it's not just enough to be flagging the problem mm-hmm. that people aren't paying the mortgages off. People need practical help in deciding how they're going to do it.
And what else is coming up for you this week and your team?
Well, another big issue has been pensions recently. There's been some big changes to the rules that are mm-hmm. going to come in next April. And what's happening is previously most people who retired with a defined contribution pension, which is a jargony phrase, in sort of the real world, that's basically a work pension that isn't a final salary pension or a personal pension. And you pay your money in, you get a pot at the end that you then need to turn into a retirement income. And previously people have bought an annuity with that. Annuities have proved to be quite poor value, and the new rules coming in mean that more people will be able to keep their pension invested and draw money from it when they need it. And one of the issues is that the pension industry is saying, well, hang on a minute, we're not ready for this. This isn't how pensions work. Mm. Pensions do not work like bank accounts. So we're going to be continuing to look into that and looking at what's going to happen come next April.
So, Simon, if anyone has any experience of this or they have their story they want to share with you or for you to investigate with your team, how can they get in contact?
Well, come to thisismoney.co.uk. The mm-hmm. contact details are there. Or you can email editor@thisismoney.co.uk. Tell us what you want to tell us and we will definitely try and look into it.
Thank you very much. Well, Simon Lambert, editor of This Is Money, the award-winning financial website and money section of The Mail Online. If there is anything that you want to ask him and his team, do get in contact with us because Simon will be here every Friday from 11 until 12. Tweet us at Share Radio UK. Email us on consumingissues@shareradio.co.uk. Give us a call, 0203 384 9849, or leave us a message on our Facebook page, Share Radio UK. Thank you very much to everybody in the studio, for Rachel, Rickard Strauss, Amy Andrew, Richard Browning, and Simon Lambert, editor of This Is Money.